Just let yourself come back slow and easy. So, the Ashtavakra Gita. This is a very interesting text. It's this particular translation, which is a gorgeous translation. He calls it the heart of awareness. And it's an anonymous text. Nobody has any idea who the author is. And the scholars also have really no idea when it was composed. So it's just one of these mysterious texts from India that is pulsating with a luminosity and a wisdom and a beauty that nobody even bothered to claim as his or her own. But whoever the author was who chose to call it the Ashtavakra Gita, Ashtavakra is a mythological figure who, his name means the like twisted eight limbs, something like that. And the story is, when he was in his mother's womb, he was already a very great being, and his father was a scholar, and his father was debating some philosophical point, and Ashtavakra, from his mother's womb, realized his father was making a mistake, so he corrected him from the womb, which upset the father so much, his pride, that he cursed the son. So the child was born with deformed, like eight twisted, deformed limbs. And it just happened, and again, it's a mythological story, and you can put any kind of meaning or interpretation that you want to. But what blew me out of the water today was I happened to be listening to the On Being episode that she's playing this week with Jean Vanier, who started the organization called L'Arche in France, which means the Ark. And it's a community now that's all over the world where people who are what we consider horribly disabled live. And to listen to him talk, have you heard, has anyone, I mean, it's so amazing. Everybody has to listen. This man is the absolute embodiment of loving kindness and tenderness. And he just tells these stories, and he talks about these people who came to live in this community. Probably their families rejected them, you know, people who had absolutely no physical body function, and they needed to be fed, they were incontinent, they couldn't dress themselves. And we just love them, and we see their beauty, and we take care of them. And he tells, you know, a story about, there's a woman who's been there now for 35 or 40 years, and she's in her 70s, and she's, you know, she's completely unable to care for herself. And she probably, to our eyes, looks like a crazy, weird person. But they just see the light, they just see the beauty, they just see the humanity. And so someone came to visit this one community, they're all over the world now, and saw this old deformed woman and said, you know, why do you keep her alive? What's the point of keeping her alive? And the director said, but we love her. And just the way he tells the story, you know, but we love her. He tells another story of when someone else comes to visit, and he's talking with Jean Vanier, and one of the little boys who has what we call Down syndrome comes in, and he's just like the happiest little creature in the world. So the man who's visiting, he describes as very dour and just kind of a depressive type of person, and this joyous little boy comes in and has whatever interaction he has, and he's just like exuding luminosity, and then he leaves, and this dour visitor says, oh, that's so sad. And Jean Vanier's, what's sad? He's so happy, you're sad. And he just, but just the way he talks, his voice, his oh God, his bob, his energy is so exquisite. And so I was listening to this today when I was walking about all these Ashtavakra kind of people who were all twisted and deformed. And he also talks about how these people who are so not what we consider powerful and are so not what is revered in our culture, they provide the balance to the really sick values of this culture. And I've never heard anyone put it that way, and it was so moving to me. And I thought, right, that's what Ashtavakra is. You know, that's what the Ashtavakra Gita is. It's like this profound balancing poem, because it really is like a poem, that it balances all of our wrong ideas of what we think we are, or what we think we should be, or what's wrong with us, or why we're not. It just takes all that stuff and it turns it on its head and sets it in a proper alignment with reality, which is so much bigger and more wonderful than all these rigid notions we have of right and wrong and high and low and good and bad and beautiful and not beautiful. So I've always been troubled by all the stories of Ashtavakra. What kind of father? Why would his father curse him? And then there's other stories. And then he goes and he wins a debate, and then somebody else gets cursed, and then he gets healed. And it's like, you know, or then he, there's a thing with these nymphs in the water that I think he goes in the water where he's going to be healed, but then the nymphs make fun of him when they realize he's a cripple, then he curses them. It's like, no, there's something really wrong with all these stories. And today I got it. Those stories, none of those stories get it, you know. This is what human beings who have not complete understanding do with these great mythological archetypal motifs. They then just take them and they turn them into these weird distortions. Whereas, I mean, this is like, this is about an attempt to teach us that we need to see below the surface of things. And does it mean we shouldn't also, then that's another thing he talks about. And it was so interesting that I was listening to this, and I've heard this program before. It's a rebroadcast. And it was so ironic that I was listening to it today when I had this text running around in my consciousness, because one of the things about this text that I don't like, which I alluded to in the email I sent today, Advaita Vedanta, in terms of Indian philosophy, like in my opinion, the coolest, best system within Indian philosophy is the Kashmir Shaivism, that is really the foundational philosophy of this course, this class, my work, my life. And the basic tenet of that is everything is inside of us, and everything is God, everything is divine, everything pulsates with consciousness. Consciousness is divine, that light of consciousness is divine, this is what we all are, it's everything, everything is divine, even when we can't see it, it's there, we're just not able to see it. And that, when I first heard it, blew me out of the water, and it's my opinion, by being moved by it, this notion has never changed in over now 40 years. So Advaita Vedanta is at least a non-dualistic system, which Kashmir Shaivism is totally non-dual. It's like everything, you know, it's like the epitome, it's the ultimate philosophy of oneness. Advaita Vedanta, like the Vedanta systems are a little bit more dualistic, like they, you know, there's a lot of just mind-body separation and yada, yada, yada. Advaita Vedanta is more, it means non-dual. And again, I don't want to get bogged down in all the philosophical stuff, which honestly, I used to know all this stuff, and I honestly can't remember like more than 10% of what I used to know. It gets very technical. But there's still a separation, because it still gets caught up in the notion of this Maya, you know, illusion. Like that the world is an illusion, that we're all an illusion, and the only thing that's real is God. But God is somehow, it's inside, but it's somehow separate, which has never made any sense to me. And that's why when just the verses that I sent today, when it says, earth, fire, and water, the wind and sky, you are none of these. Well, no, I think I am all of these. We are all of these. So that kind of thinking, I totally disagree with. However, from the perspective of this, within the paradigm of this system, it's actually saying that, but it just has this convoluted way of saying it, because on some level, it's trying to make the point that it's just an illusion, and what we really are is that, like, call it Brahman, that the light of consciousness. So it's the same, but it's like a very subtle but distinct philosophical distinction that doesn't quite work for me. So that being said, it's still a glorious text, and there's still a lot of amazing beauty in Advaita Vedanta. And I do think it's worth to just kind of contemplate this text together. But anyway, so back to, but I was so hung up on that one verse because it so annoyed me. And then I'm listening to this Jean Vanier text, and he's talking, it's all about the body, you know, it's all about tenderness for the body. It's like, we take care of these people, we bathe them, we dress them, we feed them, and we just, and in that act, we're giving love, we're giving tenderness, and this is our practice. And he's a very, very devout Catholic, and the way he talks about his relationship with Jesus, he's a very sublime being, and yet, but his worship is literally taking care of the body. And I thought, yes, yes, it's yes. So anyway, now he's old. He's, who knows? I don't, because again, I don't know when this was recorded. He was 79 when they made this recording. He tells wonderful stories about people like this woman, in the 30-year woman there, who when she first came, he was a much younger man. And now he's an old man, and he's getting weaker. You know, he doesn't have the strength he once had. And so he was sitting next to her one day, and she just pats him on the head, and she says, "Nice old man." And he said, it's like they're giving me back now the tenderness that I've given to them all these years. It was just like, yes. So anyway, we really don't need Advaita Vedanta. What we need is love, you know, what we need is tenderness, and we need it for ourselves, and then we can just reach out and touch the whole world. And you know, I listened to this thing today and I'm like, God, well, you guys can totally relate. It's like, I just want to go volunteer in a place like this. It's just like, I just want to take care of people, you know, I just want to like. And I remember when I was taking care of my mom, and when I, before I had the honor really of taking care of this dying woman, I mean, you know this intimately, when friends who were older than me, when their parents were at end of life and they would talk about having to change their diapers, and I would always be filled with revulsion. It was like, I couldn't see myself being able to do that, and it really scared me. And it was amazing, because when it was my turn, it was like, it was so easy and beautiful and not even gross, you know, it was just like devotion. And you know, even my really annoying narcissistic mother, there was so much love, you know, and it felt so good to be taking care of her in her very old body that couldn't take care of itself anymore. I could give her everything I had, and it was sublime. And I know that experience is exactly what he's talking about. You in your work, you in your, you know, it's like, it's so, and it is the body. It is the body. It's not about, like, transcending the body is not what it's about. And I mean, I've never bought into transcendence. I mean, I've been about immanence forever. That's why I'm so interested in the metaphors of the goddess, because the goddess, all the goddess traditions are about the indwelling experience of our own divinity. So anyway, blah, 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 blah. So that being said, let me read some verses to you. And again, anything that bugs you, just ignore it, but just take it, because there is tremendous Shakti in this text, and take that. And also, It's set up as most of the Indian texts are as a dialogue between the teacher and the student, so or the master and the child. But that too is interesting, that the way he's translated is master and child, because I think we want to be in that child mind, right? We want to be in beginner's mind. The only way we really imbibe the truth is when we're in beginner's mind. So, and it's nice because in this text, it's a dialogue between King Janaka, who was actually a very, very cool king, and Ashtavakra. So King Janaka says to Ashtavakra, "O master, tell me how to find detachment, wisdom, and freedom. O master, tell me how to find detachment, wisdom, and freedom." And Ashtavakra says, "Child." And again, he's talking to this king who's not a child, but he's talking to the child within all of us. "If you wish to be free, shun the poison of the senses. Seek the nectar of truth, of love and forgiveness, simplicity and happiness." And again, shun the poison of the senses. For our sensibilities, that seems a little negative and just like, But within this tradition, because the senses are always pulling us out of ourself, the senses are what attract us to the things of this world, and then we are at risk of forming attachment and aversion, which are the problems from any of the yogic traditions, because that's what creates, attachment and aversion. That is attachment. Aversion is attachment also. So the senses are what pull us out of this experience of the inner self, of our own being. And so in all of these traditions are encouraging us, turn within, don't get pulled out by the senses. What I love about Kashmir Shaivism, it's like, no, it's fine. Enjoy the senses. Enjoy it all. Love it all. Just don't get hung up in it. You know, love what you see. Love what you touch. Love what you smell. Appreciate it. Imbibe it. Be it. Just don't cling to it. And I've always found that a much more comforting and interesting philosophical system. So, but again, we just want to damp down the language here. Shun the poison of the senses. Nah. But here, seek the nectar of truth. That's our inner being. Seek the nectar of truth, the nectar of love and forgiveness, simplicity and happiness. And yeah, that's true. And that is very much a nectar, otherwise known as that luminosity, that is very present inside of us. And the more we allow ourselves to anchor, to ground in that extraordinary presence, the senses are just fun, but we're not going to be victims of, like, I see this, I have to have this, I touch this, I have to have this. It's not like that. It's just like, oh, how wonderful. And we can enjoy whatever is arising, and then whenever is arising goes away, which it always does, we can enjoy that too. And even when we're not enjoying, we can enjoy that we're not enjoying. But there's no more clinging. I mean, that actually, I'm happy to say, that's pretty much, and I am far from enlightened, but that's pretty much, I have at least made it to that point in the spectrum. Like, I'm at the point now where when I'm not enjoying, I'm enjoying anyway. And it's nice. It's very liberating to be able to, even when it's kind of a drag, it's okay. It's actually kind of fine. It's very attainable. If I've made it, you can all make it. It's very attainable. Okay, and here again, this is the verse I also, but again, read it with the understanding that it's all one, earth, fire, and water, the wind and the sky, you are none of these. See, I would say you are all of these. If you wish to be free, know you are the self. See, that's the point it's trying to get to, is don't be attached to these things outside, or don't get caught up in the illusion. But again, As I've said now 12 times, I have problems with that distinction. However, earth, fire, and water, the wind and the sky, you are none of these. If you wish to be free, know you are the self. That's the point. The witness of all of these, the heart of awareness. Know you are the self. If you wish to be free, know you are the self, the witness of all these, the heart of awareness. We talk about this all the time in meditation. Find that stream of awareness, or in the opening dharana tonight, that light, that luminosity, that's one of the ways that we can literally visually see our awareness. And that awareness, that in these traditions, that is what we are. In Shaivism, we call it the self. And then the self gets called also Shiva or Devi. And I didn't bring it in tonight because I thought we'd have a big group and there would be new people, and I didn't want to bring really heavy-duty stuff in. Now I'm sorry I didn't, because you guys would have devoured this. But I'll bring it in next time. Some very, very interesting, heady, but beautiful commentary on Shiva. And as the heart of consciousness, and it's Shiva or the goddess, either one. This is, again, is Shaivism. It's a much more inclusive system. And just the heart, and just what the heart is, and the light of the heart, and it's so beautiful. But that's what this is saying. And that's what the witness is also. They're all the same thing. They're all referring to just that. And you know when you're in it, because when you're in it, you're just like, yes. It's like, yes. It's that moment when you totally get it, when inside is just blazing and you feel completely alive. It can be in just a moment. But when those moments break through, that's the self. That's Shiva. That's Devi. That's consciousness. That's awareness. That's what this thing is talking about. That's what we seek always outside of ourselves, but it's here, and it breaks through in the heart chakra. So, is this helpful? Okay. Again. All right, I'll stop complaining. Set your body aside, but only, it's not really set your body aside. It's set your identification and judgment of your body aside. It's not about setting the body aside. It's setting your ideas about the body aside. It's setting your notions that, oh my God, my body is not perfect. Oh my God, I need it to be something else. Whatever. It's setting all that aside, or it's setting aside, I don't feel well today. Set that, all the stuff that we assign to the body that is such a downer. That's what it's really talking about, because the body is just, it's the temple, it's the container. It's our best friend. Set your body aside, sit in your own awareness. So again, we'll change it a little bit. Set your identification with the body aside and sit in your own awareness. You will at once be happy, forever still, forever free, because that awareness is pure stillness. That awareness is, it's very free. It's just a luminous freedom. You have no caste, no duties bind you, formless and free, beyond the reach of the senses, the witness of all things. So be happy. Right or wrong, joy and sorrow, these are of the mind only. They are not yours. It is not really you who acts or enjoys. You are everywhere, forever free. So he's talking about underneath all of our sense of self, the small self, the self, that identity that moves through our day and our life. In this system, it's like we're so much deeper than that, and that's what we want to identify with. And again, we can say we can do it all, and I would rather do it all. But within this system, it's still very beautiful, because it's saying, find the spaciousness of your own awareness and live from that luminosity, and then everything is fine. Forever and truly free, the single witness of all things. But if you see yourself as separate, then you are bound. I'll give you these again. Right or wrong. See, this is where it is very non-dualistic, which is beautiful. Right or wrong, joy and sorrow, these are of the mind only. They are not yours. It is not really you who acts or enjoys. You are everywhere, forever free. Forever and truly free, the single witness of all things. But if you see yourself as separate, then you are bound. You see, it's the separation that gets us all messed up. Because, and that's enough. I'll reread all that again next week because it takes a while to really imbibe it. But it's like the sense of separation is what messes us up. You know, we've talked about this for so many years. It's like there's oneness, and then there's the process of individuation, which is very important. And as individuation, that sense of self, it rises up from the big self. It rises up from the womb of being, and everything's fine. It knows what its source is. It knows it's grounded in the ground of being. But at a certain point, it turns outward. And see, that's when the senses kick in. And when it turns outward, it loses its connection to its source, to the ground of being. That's the problem. And that's the point of individuation where alienation and a sense of separation arises. And that's why all these traditions are like the senses are a problem, because the senses are what relate us to the exterior world. And that becomes a problem when we forget what our source is, because then we fall into a sense of alienation, separation, loneliness. That's where stress, that's where addiction, that's where anxiety, all that stuff happens in that space of forgetfulness. And so that's why the trick is to, it's like we want to be facing out and facing in at the same time. So we never forget, this is what I am, this is where I come from, but I'm going to delight in everything out here too. I'm going to have it all. And then that sense of alienation and separation goes away because there's always this profound experience of everything's cool. Right? Yeah? Okay. I'm exhausted. So, Om Namah Shivaya. So the thing about Om Namah Shivaya, this mantra, because again, in Shaivism, where the central metaphor is of Shiva or the goddess, Shiva is the name of everything we're talking about, the witness, awareness, the light, everything we're talking about. And so this mantra, and it's like that awareness, resting in that awareness and really feeling how that awareness pervades everything. And that awareness, that's what holds insight. That's what holds insight intelligence. That's what holds inspiration. That's what holds discrimination. That's what holds everything that makes us much more than just dopey humans trying to survive. That's what gives us uplift and awaken spirit and soul and gives us the capacity of wisdom and the ability to make a world that, I mean, it's been so messed up because so much of the world has been made by people that are coming from a very distorted, alienated place. But It's like if anything's going to save this planet right now, it's the power within awareness, human awareness, and that being channeled through human beings who have done enough work on themselves to be clear enough so that they can actually make a sustainable world. But that awareness, that's the blood of it, and that's if we can do nothing else in meditation practice, we want to just keep reaching into and looking for that very subtle, what's the word I want? It's like a substance. It's an energetic substance that is it's both the source and the everythingness that we are. And so that's what all these texts are about. And so the mantra Om Namah Shivaya, it literally, within the sonic vibration of this mantra, it does contain all of this stuff. And that's why I always come back to it. And so we'll chant it tonight, and we'll chant it for a while, and then we'll sit some more. And as you're chanting, see if you can let your mind really dissolve in the experience of chanting the mantra. And really play with that, you know, just try to, I don't know how to say this any more clearly. Like, one of the things that happens for people, I know a lot with meditation practice, with chanting practice, you know, the mind kicks in and it creates distraction, it has questions, it gets bored. It's so friggin' annoying. And it tricks us out of really receiving the fruit of the practice. And because the mind does not want to dissolve, because the mind has forgotten its source is dissolution. And so it resists dissolving into its source, because it's afraid it's not going to come back. It's always going to come back. That's never a problem, because it's just kind of how it works. And so the more, at least when we're doing practice together, that you can keep reminding your mind and assuring your mind, like the same thing Jean Vanier talks about with the people that he cares for. It's like with tenderness, you know, it's okay. It's okay. Don't be afraid. Allow yourself to dissolve and connect with your source. And then you're going to feel so happy that you'll just be very glad you did. So try to chant with that awareness, and then we'll sit for a bit. And there we have it.